chapter of Daniel is the longest prophecy anywhere in the Bible. It was written in 538 B.C., 538 years before the birth of Christ. And all of these things that are written here did not come to pass until about a little over 100 years later. Now, this prophecy is given in quite a lot of detail. And if you want any proof that the Bible is divinely inspired, I think that this chapter is one of the best proofs. Nobody, absolutely nobody, could, by any human means whatsoever, have written something so thorough as this, predicted it, and then had it happen just exactly as it said. And every last detail of this chapter came to pass just a little over 100 years later. Starts out, "Also I, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I, stood to confirm and to strengthen him." This was written in 538 B.C. "And now I will show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia." You might take notes on this if you'd like. "Cambyses," C-A-M-B-Y-S-E-S, C-A-M-B-Y-S-E-S was the first. "Smerdis" was the second, S-M-E-R-D-I-S. "Darius the first," D-A-R-I-U-S, Darius the first was the third. And then "Xerxes," "and the fourth shall be far richer than they all," was Xerxes, X-E-R-X-E-S, X-E-R-X-E-S. And he did attack Greece, and by his strength through his riches he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia, or Greece. "And a mighty king shall stand up, that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will." Now the great king that rose up later out of this was Alexander the Great of the Greco-Macedonian Empire. "And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds." Alexander the Great was the greatest military man in history. They still teach his tactics in West Point. They still teach it to our army officers. He devised warfare as we know it today with armies that moved quickly, and that he was so wise in devising different weapons of destruction, for instance, a catapult and things like that for taking walled cities, that they declared him a genius, and he conquered the known world. He was 33 years old when he died. He began ruling, I believe, about the time he was 20. And he, with his army, conquered the entire world. He died of a drunken debauch in India. He conquered all of Egypt, all of North Africa. He conquered all of Macedonia and Greece, what is now Turkey, and Israel and Palestine and Lebanon and Syria and Iran and Iraq, and on out through Egypt, took the entire world. By the time he was only 33 years old, then when he died, this four winds that his kingdom should be broken and should be divided toward the four winds of heaven, and his posterity shall not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion, which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up, even for others beside those. Now when he died, four of his generals took over. He defeated, Alexander did, the Persians at the Battle of Issus. That's I-S-S-U-S, the Battle of Issus in 333, and the Battle of Arbela in 331. You should have those two dates because that is when he came into a world power. That is the time when Alexander the Great really started to rule the world. Now his empire was divided to four generals, plus a few other unimportant divisions. A man named Ptolemy, P-T-O-L-E-M-Y, P-T-O-L-E-M-Y, took Egypt. A man named Antipater, A-N-T-I-P-A-T-E-R, took Macedonia. Laomedon, L-A-O-M-E-D-O-N, took Syria, which is just north of Palestine. I wish I had a map here so you could see all of this. And Seleucus Nicator, S-E-L-E-U-C-U-S-N-I-C-A-T-O-R, Nicator, took Babylon. Now here Daniel was predicting that this was going to happen, and this is exactly what did happen about 100 years later. So he was to stand up. He was to be a great king to stand up. His dominion was to be broken and scattered to the four winds of the heaven, which it was under his four generals. It did not go to his posterity. He had a bastard son, a child that was born illegitimately. Nothing passed to that son. None of his dominion was ever given to him. Rather, he had lived with a number of women without marrying any of them. And he died merely because he so dissipated his body that his health went to pot. Now, and the king of the south, who became this Ptolemy Soter, P-T-O-L-E-M-Y Soter, S-O-T-E-R, shall be strong, and one of his princes, who was Seleucus Nicator, one of the four generals of Alexander the Great, and one of his princes, and he shall be strong above him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. And in the end of years they shall join themselves together. For the king's daughter of the south shall come to the king of the north to make an agreement. Now, in the Bible language, as most of you have heard before, north and south refer to north and south of Jerusalem. North is Syria, south is Egypt. And that's the way this works out here. To make an agreement. Now, that was a marriage agreement which took place between Antiochus II of Syria, the second of Syria, who was the king of the north, and Bernice, who was the daughter of the king of the south. Antiochus' first wife, in history now, this is what happened. Antiochus' first wife took vengeance by having Bernice slain, the Egyptians who attended her killed her son, and they murdered her son. The King James has a mistranslation here, as we'll find. And Antiochus was poisoned. Now that is what actually happened. You can dig this out of secular history, and I'll see how he foretold it here. And in the end of years, they shall join themselves together. For the king's daughter of the south shall come to the king of the north, Bernice, coming to marry Antiochus II, to make an agreement, which was a marriage contract, the agreement that they had, joining these two nations together. But she shall not retain the power of the arm. Now that does not mean the power of an army, but the power of her descendancy. Her son was killed by the Egyptian attendants. Neither shall he stand, nor his arm. In other words, her son was killed. He would not stand, nor any of his offspring. But she shall be given up, and they that brought her, and he that begat her, and he that strengthened her in these times. Now, all of these people, those that attended her, were killed. Those that strengthened her, her attendants from Egypt, were killed. Her son was killed. Her husband was poisoned. And she died. But out of a branch of her roots. Now a branch of her roots would be her father and mother, a branch would be a brother or sister. This happened to be her brother, who was Ptolemy, P-T-O-L, E-M-Y, the third, shall one stand up in his estate, which shall come with an army, and shall enter into the fortress of the king of the north, and shall deal against them, and shall prevail. Now that is this Ptolemy the third conquering Syria. He was the brother of Bernice, who had married the king of the north. And shall also carry captives into Egypt, their gods, with their princes, with their precious vessels of silver and of gold, and he shall continue more years, or remain some years than the king of the north. So the king of the south shall come into his kingdom and shall return into his own land. But his sons shall be stirred up. Now, let's see. His sons shall be stirred up and shall assemble a multitude of great forces. And one shall certainly come and overflow and pass through. Then shall he return and be stirred up even to his fortress. Of the two sons of Seleucus II, one, who was Antiochus the Great, invaded Syria, Palestine, and he concludes a treaty. It was renewed with war in 217 B.C., and then he attacked several other fortresses near the border of Egypt. So his sons there, the king of the south, shall be moved with color, and shall come forth and fight with him, even with the king of the north. He shall set forth a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into his hand. Now this "his" here was Philopater of Egypt. He defeated the king of the north at a place called Raphia, R-A-P-H-I-A. And when he hath taken away the multitude, his heart shall be lifted up, and he shall cast down many 10,000s, but he shall not be strengthened by it. Now, the Egyptians annexed Palestine to Egypt, but they made a rash treaty with Syria, and that dissipated their victory and made it as nil or nothing. Then Philopater persecuted thousands of Jews. Notice it's a thing that the Syrians did, a persecution of the Jews, in the city of Alexandria in Egypt, because he was struck with paralysis when trying to enter the temple at Jerusalem. Another case where God moved to strike a man down when he was doing something that was absolutely against the will of God, where he was disobeying God wantonly, and he was struck down with paralysis. Then he spent the rest of his time persecuting the Jews. For the king of the north, in the 13th verse, shall return and shall set forth a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come after certain years with a great army and with much riches. King of the north was Antiochus the third. After 14 years, he assembled a great army to conquer Egypt, which had a weak king. And in those times there shall many stand up against the king of the south. Also the robbers of thy people shall exalt themselves to establish the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north shall come and cast up a mount and take the most fenced cities, and the arms of the south shall not withstand, neither his chosen people, neither shall there be any strength to withstand. Now, Antiochus, the fulfilling of verse 15, momentarily occupied by an attack from Pergamum, they were attacking him, attacked Egypt in 198 B.C., and he defeated the Egyptian ally Scopas, as a man named Panias, P-A-N-E-A-S, retook Palestine. This is all, it shouldn't be dry history to you. As a matter of fact, I'd like to see more of you taking notes to have this down so you'll know what this chapter is all about. This is really the one chapter absolute. This was all written more than 100 years before it happened, and you can read, this is from Rawlinson's Ancient History, which is not obtainable now. You can't get it in any bookstore anywhere. But it is from secular history, not from by religious writers at all, proving that every last event that was foretold here took place. So the king of the north and so on shall come, which was verse 15. In verse 16, but he that cometh against him shall do according to his own will, and none shall stand before him, and he shall stand in the glorious land which by his hand shall be consumed. He shall also set his face to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom, and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do, and he shall give him the daughter of women, corrupting her, but she shall not stand on his side, neither be for him. Now, Antiochus planned to conquer Egypt by trickery, and his daughter Cleopatra was given in marriage to a man named Ptolemy Epiphanes. This contract, or business deal, actually, is what it was. He was going to sell his daughter in marriage to make a compact. Appeared, or seemed to be, of uprightness and equal conditions. But it failed, and then Cleopatra aided her husband against her father. Her father sold her, you might say, in marriage to Ptolemy. So she married him, but it didn't work out. She turned on her father and helped her husband defeat him. He shall also set his face to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do, and he shall give him the daughter of women, corrupting her, but she shall not stand on his side, neither be for him. After this shall he turn his face unto the isles, or coastlands, and shall take many. But a prince for his own behalf shall cause the reproach offered by him to cease. Without his own reproach he shall cause it to turn upon him. That was Antiochus invading Asia Minor and taking the Aegean Islands, which are off the coast of between Greece and Italy. And the Roman general Scipio, S-C-I-P-I-O, we hear a lot about him in history, in 190 B.C., crosses the Syrian, reproached to Rome to return on his own head, and Antiochus was overwhelmingly defeated in that year. Now notice, after this he shall turn his face to the coastlands, the isles, which he did. He invaded Asia Minor, and he took the Aegean Islands. A prince for his own behalf shall cause the reproach offered by him to cease. Roman General Scipio in 190 causes the Syrian reproach to Rome to return on his own head. Without his own reproach he shall cause it to turn upon him. Then he shall turn his face toward the fort of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. And that happened at Antiochus after returning to Antioch, which was a fort, is murdered in a town there by the people for plundering the temple to pay Roman indemnity. Now by this time the world was under Rome, and the circumstances of his death are not too well known. They say that he died a dozen different ways. Then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom, but within a few days he shall be destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle. Now we're getting down now to where we're coming to what's going to happen today. In present history, each of these prophecies has a dual meaning. Each of them has a dual fulfillment. I'm giving you now the history of when this was fulfilled in the past. Much of this has been fulfilled a second time with Mussolini and Hitler. You're going to see a few verses here later what is going to come to happen in the very near future. Now, verse 20, Then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes and the glory of the kingdom. But within a few days he shall be destroyed neither in anger nor in battle. Heliodorus, Heliodorus, was sent by Seleucus the Fourth. There have been a Seleucus the Second and the Third and the Fourth and a Philopater the Third and Fourth and Ptolemy the Third, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, and so on. And only the important ones are mentioned here. They're the ones that I'm mentioning because they are the ones who fulfilled this prophecy. The rest of them were inconsequential people that never amounted to anything. Heliodorus was sent by Seleucus the Fourth as a tax collector. The king was poisoned. King James here has a mistranslation, there shall arise one who shall send a tax collector. Not there shall send, it should not be here, then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes, or exactor as it has in the margin, but it should be there shall arise one who shall send a tax collector according to the best ancient Hebrew manuscripts. Now, come down to verse 21, and in his estate shall stand up a vile person, to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries, or come in time of security. Now we're coming down to where it's beginning to talk about Hitler. If you'll notice, everything in this verse will apply directly to him. He fulfilled it in a dual manner, the second time, just as surely as it has been fulfilled before. Now this first pile person back there was Antiochus Epiphanes. You've heard a lot about him. You'll hear him preached about in a good number of sermons. Anybody who's touching on prophecy will mention his name because he's that important. Antiochus Epiphanes, that's spelled E-P-I-P-H-A-N-E-S. E-P-I-P-H-A-N-E-S, Antiochus Epiphanes. And with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. Now, let's see, after the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully, for he shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. This vile person, Antiochus Epiphanes, collects armies. He quelled all of his foes. A high priest, Onias, O-N-I-A-S, was replaced by Jason. He had the high priest then replaced. And that is where he took the Prince of the Covenant. It was not Christ here, but the high priest at that time. In the 23rd verse, Antiochus Epiphanes deals deceitfully with Rome and with the high priest. Now, Jason was replaced with a man named Menelaus, M-E-N-E-L-A-U-S. This man is the type of the final beast dictator in Europe. Now, Hitler has in many ways fulfilled a lot of this. If you will see that he was, before him came Bismarck, who was a raiser of taxes, first man to unify Germany, to make it a united kingdom and a united nation of all the various independent states that they have had in Germany. You might call him a raiser of taxes, or say that he sent other people to raise taxes. He was destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle. And in his estate would stand up this vile person to whom they should not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and attain the kingdom by flatteries. Now, Hitler I'm not sure but what this may have another fulfilling a little later on, but Hitler, if you remember, back in 1933, obtained Germany, his power in Germany. He became chancellor. He did not become dictator. They had the president, old von Hindenburg, who was, well, he'd been president of the Weimar Republic, and he was a weak and feeble old man. Actually, in reading about him, I feel quite sorry for him. He was a very stern man who had some very high ideals, but he didn't know how to put them in practice too well. Hitler came in, and by every deceitful means possible, made speeches all over the face of Germany, promised the Germans everything on the face of the earth. He made every promise conceivable to the people, and by flattery, by most deceitful, vile type of means, got himself not elected. They held an election, and Hitler lost. Two of them, and I believe three, Hitler lost. He could not win an election in Germany. But by playing dirty politics, so to speak, and by his vile, sneaky manner, he came in and took possession of Germany, and yet not of his own power. Then, later on, with the arms of the flood, he did overflow all over Europe. Now, the 24th verse, he shall enter peaceably even upon the fattest places of the province, and he shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. He shall scatter among them the prey and spoil and riches, yea, and he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds even for a time. Now, that happened in the past that Antiochus, who had conquered all of these surrounding regions in Asia Minor, distributed the wealth, and then he issued a lot of propaganda. He was a completely vile person. Completely. And he took wealth and he distributed it around to people, and then he more or less double-crossed them. He threatened everybody, and he was quite a funny type of person. And he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army, and the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army. But he shall not stand, for they shall forecast devices against him. So Antiochus Epiphanes reduced Egypt, or took it, in four campaigns, beginning in the year 173 B.C. Now, the forecast devices were a bribery and propaganda. You find that they used propaganda quite effectively back in those days by sending people amongst those of the nation that they were going to fight in Egypt and spreading false news and false doctrines and telling lies. And then when they had the people in a point where they wanted them, they'd just go in and take over. Yea, they that feed of the portion of his meat shall destroy him. Those that feed of the portion of his meat shall destroy him, and his army shall overflow, and many shall fall down slain. Now, Ptolemy Philometor of Egypt is betrayed to the Syrians and made prisoner in guise of friendship, because conqueror and prisoner are uncle and nephew. The Egyptians in Alexandria make Ptolemy's brother the king. In verse 27, and both these kings' hearts shall be to do mischief, and they shall speak lies at one table, but it shall not prosper, for yet the end shall be at the time appointed. The uncle and the nephew at the banquet were trying to deceive each other. It sounds like Hitler and Mussolini and some of the banquets they used to have. Then shall he return into his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant. He shall do exploits and return to his own land. And at the time appointed he shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as the former or as the latter. In verse 28, Antiochus returns and persecutes Jews who rejoice upon hearing a false report of his death, when he was not dead. Then the king of the north returned to Egypt when his brothers learned of the uncle's treachery. The Romans demanded a withdrawal, and Rome makes Egypt a protectorate. Now, verse 30, for the ships of Chittim shall come against him, therefore he shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the Holy Covenant. So shall he do. He shall even return and have intelligence with them that forsake the Holy Covenant. Now, the ships of Chittim, I believe that is better spelled with a K, was the Roman fleet. And renegade Jews joined with the Gentile Syrians to destroy what remained of true religion in Palestine.